Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's April 30th. We've got 39 degrees and rain here in Old Town Park City, 45 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, we've got some scattered showers making their way through the northern half of the state this morning as a front continues to work its way in from north to south across the area. Now, this front, I'm going to call a boundary because it doesn't really have any cold air behind it. It also doesn't have any real warm air ahead of it. So we're kind of seeing temperatures pretty much the same on either side. So we'll call it a boundary, but it's enough of a wind shift to create the lift that gives us these scattered showers rolling through. So watch out for some downpours. This will likely continue for the next couple of hours to about 10 or 11 o'clock this morning, and then we're going to start to see this tapering off as we get into the midday and afternoon hours as we start to mix back in a little bit of sunshine. As far as temperatures go for today, it is going to be a little bit cooler overall than what we've seen the past couple of days, with Park City seeing a high temperature around the low 50s, and then notice in the Heber Valley we're looking at highs in the upper 50s to near 60 with, again, those scattered showers early on, tapering off by the afternoon hours. So if you got something you need to do outside, if you can hold off until after lunchtime, looks like it will be improving conditions compared to what we're seeing out there through the morning hours. Now, as we go into your Thursday and Friday, get ready for a lot of sunshine as we see high pressure building back in across the area. It will have a cool start for us on our Thursday morning with temperatures right around the freezing mark to start the day. But as we get into the afternoon hours, we'll see those highs in the upper 50s in Park City with highs back into the mid to upper 60s there for us in the Heber Valley. Now, Thursday night into Friday, we head back down into the mid 30s for your morning overnight lows, and high temperatures on your Friday with lots of sunshine will climb into the mid 60s for us in Park City as we go throughout your Friday afternoon, with high temperatures climbing into the low to mid 70s in the Heber Valley. So overall, Friday is going to be your pick day for the rest of the week. So kind of circle that on the calendar there, as it's going to be looking pretty good both Thursday and Friday, but Friday is the best day. Now, to go into the weekend, here come more changes. We've got a stronger storm system coming in from the Pacific Ocean that will start to approach the area as we get towards your Saturday. That will bring us a few isolated showers on our Saturday afternoon, but don't expect much rain on Saturday. We will have increasing clouds, though. Temperatures will climb into the mid-60s for highs in Park City, and we'll see those highs into the low 70s here in the Heber Valley. Now, as we get into your Sunday, get ready. Big changes on the way by Sunday, as we've got a good chance of showers and thunderstorms throughout the day on your Sunday. Sunday could be an active weather day across the area with those temperatures starting off in the mid-40s there in both the Heber Valley and Park City, so well above freezing with highs around 60 in Park City and highs in the mid-60s in the Heber Valley. Again, could have a couple of rumbles of thunder on Sunday as well, and make sure you keep the rain gear handy for Sunday. And that low pressure kind of stalls out across the state heading into your Monday. So that means Monday we'll see more off and on scattered showers likely across the Heber Valley with highs only in the upper 50s. And in Park City, we'll see those scattered showers continuing with highs only around 50 degrees. So a more significant cool down coming in for the beginning of next week for both Park City and the Heber Valley as we stay with similar conditions even into your Tuesday.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Cedric.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with newly named Park City Fire Chief Pete Emmerly, along with Fire Marshal Mike Owens with an update from the district. Park City City Manager Matt Dye is previewing this week's City Council meeting. And Park City School District parents Sylvia Herbert and Meg Marshland with details about this year's high school graduation night and the need for funding. Again, Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. And stay tuned for The Mountain Life coming up right after the local news hour. This week's guests are America's anti-fat pastor, Steve Reynolds, who's on a crusade to inspire the faithful to lose weight. Pastor Steve says Christians are the most overweight demographic, and after he lost 100 pounds, he's out to change that. Then the Get Ahead of Stroke campaign is celebrating Survive Stroke Week. That happens May 4th through the 10th to raise awareness of stroke symptoms and the importance of calling 911 right away for the best possible chance to survive and thrive after stroke. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, of course, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10. A First Amendment dispute is brewing in the Wasatch County School District. That after a principal asked a teacher to take down a flyer about a prayer chain. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
Taryn Israelson, a first grade teacher at J.R. Smith Elementary School in Heber, hung a sign in the teacher's lounge in October 2024, inviting faculty to join a prayer chain. A few days later, the principal at J.R. Smith asked Israel Sin to take the sign down because of its religious nature. Now, attorneys connected to the nonprofit First Liberty Institute have asked the Wasatch County School District to allow Israel Sin's sign to go back up. In a letter to the district April 28th, attorneys Michael Menson and Keisha Russell said the principal's request violated the teacher's constitutional right to express her religion. Menson is based in the Salt Lake City office of Meyer Brown. Russell is senior counsel at First Liberty, a Texas-based organization focused on defending religious freedom. Russell told KPCW Tuesday the First Liberty Institute got involved after Israel Sin contacted the organization. She said posting a flyer about prayer in the teacher's lounge is constitutionally protected speech since other forms of private expression are allowed.
Whenever the government opens a forum, so that means a place where you can speak. So for example, in the break room, people can post things on the fridge or put things on the table or have open discussions around the table. When the government allows that, then it can't discriminate against religious speech. That's what the Constitution calls viewpoint discrimination, and it's unconstitutional.
She said, since Israel Sin isn't speaking on behalf of the district, it's not government speech, so it's protected by law. Russell compared it to the Kennedy v. Bremerton School District case when the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a high school football coach who prayed on the field after games. She said that although the First Amendment prohibits a government entity from favoring or endorsing a religion, that doesn't mean all religious expression is prohibited.
The Establishment Clause says that the government cannot establish a religion. A lot of governments, especially school districts, took that idea combined with the idea of the separation of church and state and assumed that meant religion had to be censored and banished from the public square. But that's not what that clause means.
The attorneys gave the district a deadline of May 14th to rescind the principal's request to take the sign down. Otherwise, Russell said the situation could escalate to a lawsuit.
In this situation, we're hoping that a letter to the school district will be enough and we won't have to move forward with any kind of lawsuit or anything like that. But I can tell you it's hard to predict.
This isn't the first time First Liberty has intervened in a Utah school district's actions. In 2023, the organization warned the Davis County School District not to remove copies of the Bible from its libraries, despite a parent's complaint that its contents violated the state's sensitive materials law. The books were later returned to the shelves. In a statement to KPCW Monday, the district said it is aware of the letter from the attorneys and said it's gathering more information. It said, quote, as a public school district, we are committed to respecting the constitutional rights of all employees while also ensuring that our policies comply with applicable federal and state laws, including those that govern the separation of church and state. The district strives to foster an inclusive environment for all staff and students, regardless of their individual beliefs, end quote. The district said it hasn't made any decisions yet about the most appropriate path forward. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, as we have reported, Pete Emery has been named as the new chief for the Park City Fire District. He joins me now in the studio along with Fire Marshal Mike Owens. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And congratulations. Pete, you've been on the job for what, less than a month now, huh?
Yeah, Chief Sinetti retired mid-month, and my actual start date is May 1st, so I'm in charge, but as a lot of people say, I'm a chief in waiting.
Okay. Well, tell us and our listeners a little bit about yourself. I know you have worked your way up the ranks of Park City Fire District.
Yeah, I've been in the fire service for just about 25 years. I've been with Park City Fire for over 20. In fact, Fire Marshal Owens and I were in the same recruit camp this time 20 years ago, and I think we still look the same. We haven't aged a minute.
Not a bit.
My wife and I live in Jeremy Ranch with a 16-year-old son who's at the Park City High School, and I could not be more honored for the position I've been able to be named for.
I'm just thinking about that recruit camp. That's pretty tough. That's like carrying a bunch of weight up ladders and stuff. Could you still do it?
Well, I think I had to carry Mike a couple times, and that was the hardest thing.
I wasn't light. And, you know, in all fairness, we should say that it's easier now than it was when we went through it. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with the announcement here, I mean, you've been working under former Chief Bob Zanetti, so you probably have pretty good idea how things are done, yeah?
Yeah, I've been really fortunate. I've been in the command staff now for about 10 years. I was the training chief for about 7 years. I worked under Chief Hewitt and Deputy Chief Zanetti at that time. And then in Chief Hewitt's passing, I was named the deputy chief, where I've been working, you know, just under or next to Chief Zanetti for the past 4 years. So, and he left us in just an absolutely tremendous position. Our staffing couldn't be better, our facilities. So I'm really fortunate, and I just really can't screw it up is really the only thing I have to do at this point.
Yeah, so I'm guessing one of the major things you do is prepare a budget. You have a pretty good handle on that?
Yeah, our budget, we prepare the budget. Our budget looks good. Our budget usually seems to be flat again for coming into 2026. You know, we have to get closer to that. Obviously, we have some increases looking at it, you know, with these tariffs. Our apparatus, which are pretty big purchases, could be getting a little more expensive, but we're in a good position there with the budget.
Yeah, and again, now that ambulance operations have been taken over by North and South Summit, that's saving the district some money as well, yeah?
Yeah, and I think more importantly, what it's really done is we're able to lean on each other. You know, we lean on North Summit Fire when we get busy and vice versa. You know, they certainly helped us out during the busy ski season. And typically we help them out on the wildland side during the summer season. So it's been a really good relationship. Both Chief Nielsen and Chief Thrill have really created both just stellar operations, both in North Summit and South Summit Fire. So it's a great collaboration. I think overall, all the communities are better off for the position we're in with this EMS system.
Yeah. Since you're not officially the fire chief, will you wait then until you name a deputy chief? Do you have somebody in mind?
Yeah, right now we're going through that process. I have five candidates that are going through the process right now. They've submitted some work they've done, as well as we'll be doing interviews tomorrow. So hopefully we'll have that named in the by next week. And again, we just have just an incredible staff. I'm really fortunate. The hard part is it makes it a very, very difficult decision, but we'll have that coming out here shortly.
All right. And you say that Chief Zanetti kept you, left you in good shape. With staffing, so you're set? You don't need to do any more recruitment plans?
I would say right now, to get us through this summer, we're in a really good position. As I said, Mike and I were, I think, the second or third recruit camp the Park City Fire's ever run, and now we've been doing it for 20-plus years. So we're at a point now where we have guys retiring. So we're looking at a recruit camp this fall, what those numbers look like, probably 8-ish guys, but that's been normal for us. We typically have to do recruit camp every year just through, you know, that normal retirement, just like Chief Zanetti's doing right now if he's on the beach, or I think he might be in the Alps, but that's the end goal for our staff. We want them to enjoy the retirement, so we are foreseeing most likely a recruit camp this coming fall.
All right. What, again, because staffing is usually the biggest budget item, what about some of the capital needs that the district's facing? We hear about perhaps moving that Pinebrook station across the highway to Jeremy Ranch.
Yeah, we're working on that right now. We're just kind of waiting to see where the Summit County falls, if we can get into that property. We have the money banked for that station. You know, we're looking at somewhere around probably $5 million, maybe plus for that. But we're prepared for that. We've been preparing for that since Chief Hewitt was running the operations. And what that really does for us is it gets that station into a really good response spot. It gets us right next to that roundabout, and it'll actually increase our response into Summit Park, Jeremy, and keep with it the area where it's right now. It will increase the times into those areas, but it's still well within what our marks are. So response-wise, getting that station built will be huge for us. And financially, we've prepared for it. Again, you know, thanks to Chief Zanetti and Chief Hewitt, they put us in such a good spot that we're able to make these moves and build a station, hopefully a new station 35.
Yeah, so when do you hope to build that?
Well, I'd like to build it tomorrow, mm-hmm. but I would say I'm, to be conservative, hopefully in the next 5 years. You know, we're probably looking at, from once we get the go-ahead, we're probably looking at a 3-year from start to finish. So hopefully in the next 3 to 4 years, we'll be able to get that up and running.
All right, and then there had been some talk about that property where the Pine Brook Station is would maybe go to Summit County instead of a land
trade?
Yeah,
we haven't hit that point. I'm not sure if we'll sell it or trade it with the county or trade it with another entity. So that's still to be worked on.
All right. And then in terms of other capital needs, I mean, what are you facing? You mentioned apparatus. You have engines that need to be replaced?
Yeah, heavy apparatus and ambulances now are just a constant turnover. But again, we have a plan for that. We plan out now at least 10 years in advance. And part of that issue is a fire engine right now. It takes 4 years from order to receiving. And that's a post-COVID issue that we're dealing with. Prior to that, we were looking at less than a year. But now post-COVID, you're about 4 years to receive that heavy apparatus. But we're prepared for it. I think we have at least 4 apparatus currently in queue, just forecasting out. So again, those are already built into our budget. So it's not a huge hit. Again, we typically buy a heavy apparatus per year. That's that build out plan that we have. And then we've added in obviously those ambulances as well, but we shouldn't, it really won't affect our budget outside of it's the norm now where we're sitting.
So where are these vehicles built? Are they?
You know, that's a good
question.
They're not overseas. I want to say Wisconsin, but I could be way off. I'm not sure if you know, Mike.
I don't. I know it's built in the Midwest, and we send crews out there or we send a couple of the firefighters out there as they're going through the building process. We get oversight on everything, so we get to inspect the process, and it's something we watch pretty closely. Like Chief Emery said, it's a long, long process.
Yeah. And again, with that 4 years, you had mentioned like tariffs. So that just being the parts to build the.
Yeah, and I've been in talks with. There's really 2 manufacturers that we use, and they've both said, you know, that we could be seeing a 10%+ increase to the cost of those engines, and it's really that won't be built in until we get closer to those build dates. So right now, it's we're not seeing an increase, but. There is certainly that possibility.
All right. I also wanted to ask you, and does Park City Fire, is there a union as part of you? Because, of course, we've heard about the teachers and the fire and first responders.
Park City Fire does have a union, and I cannot say enough positive things about them. They've been great to work with. I think we're better because of them. So we do have a strong union, and we work extremely well with each other.
Yeah, and I don't have the house number right in front of me, but I mean, if in fact that does get enforced and not overturned as we see the referendum process being played out, what does that mean? I mean, who do you negotiate with?
You know, Park City Fire does not. We don't do a collective bargaining with our union, so we do our wages all internally. We do that through a committee with union and non-union members, but we're in a really good spot pay-wise, so I don't foresee the collective bargaining really being an issue for us just because we don't do it. I know that might be a bigger issue more for the teachers, and I know some of the station or departments in the Valley do collective bargaining, but it's not something Park City does.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to tell us about, Mike? I know we're all going to ask you a little bit about just no open burning. We're seeing that happen.
Park City Council did pass that rule. There will be no open burning or fireworks this year within the Park City limits. If you do want to have there are some exceptions to that. So if you have a fire pit that's already permitted, that's allowed. If you want to permit a fire pit in the future, you can go through the process to do that. So there are ways around that, but generally they're not going to be having a lot of open burning. June 15th is the start date for that.
Okay.
On the fire district side of things, our chipping program is starting up, so we encourage people to go to our website, www.pcfd.org. You can register to have your pile chipped. It's more or less the same program that we were doing last year. We are making a few changes to it. The result is that the chippers will be doing some other duties as well that we're pretty excited about. We're still getting those finished up, so a little bit more information to come on that later. But we are asking people, get your registrations in early, so that we can get your piles done and make sure there's enough time for them to do all of that.
Okay, so even if they register, I mean, how soon would you be out just to give people time to get down what they want chipped?
We are starting to chip on the 12th of May.
Okay.
And once we start, you know, we're just doing those continual laps, and there'll be pauses throughout the summer, and then we'll be back to that chipping. So same thing as last year. So some of those people who, most people use the program 1 or 2 times. There were a couple that used it 4, 5, or 6 times. We may not be able to get all of their piles if they try to do that same sort of thing this year.
Okay. And why the firework ban so early in the season? It seems like we have to wait till like June.
You know, it's a state law, actually. So what happens is, by state law, we can only set off fireworks during certain times of the year, within 4 days around the 4th of July, and then New Year's, and then also the Chinese New Year. Outside of that, we can't do fireworks anyway. However, by state law, if cities are going to enact firework bans, they have to let the county know by a certain time period, so that the county has time to make that information public and fireworks manufacturer or fireworks resellers can set up their plans for the year.
Mm-hmm. And I think Wasatch County, though, has already made that announcement. So
they
Summit
did.
County hasn't jumped on.
Well, the whole thing comes down to a map. So there just has to be a map created. Wasatch County has created their map already. They did restrict fireworks outside of the city limits in Heber within the areas of Wasatch County. We'll be seeing something similar to that this year, I would expect, as well as Summit County makes their decision.
Okay, and just a little bit more about fire pits, because I know we talked about this last year. Are you talking about even just the propane family, you know, patio fire pits?
Within the city limits of Park City, you do have to have a permit for those types of fire pits. They're easy to get. You contact the building department. They come out and look at it. And really, all they're looking to make sure is that you're using the thing the way it's designed to be used. They don't want you using it right up next to your house. On the instructions for the fire pit, there is what we call the listing, and that's the rules that you follow when you use the fire pit. So as long as you're doing that, you'll be just fine.
Okay. Anything else people ought to know?
You know, the summer's coming up, and we've had different forecasts for the weather. Now's a great time to get out there and take care of some of the weeds that have collected under the bushes over the winter, or also under your deck. We will be doing our structure assessments as well. Those will open up on May 1st. People will be able to register on our website for those also, where we're happy to come out to your house, walk around, and give you specific things for your house that you can do to harden your home against a wildfire.
Okay. Mike, Pete, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Park City Council meets in work session Thursday starting at 4:00 at the City Council Chambers in the studio. With a preview of the meeting, I have Park City City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie. Sorry if I'm a little out of breath. It's running in here. I appreciate it.
All right. Let's see. We start off with another budget work session. This week, Council will have another look at next year's fiscal year budget. That starts July 1st. Anything in particular the Council needs to consider at Thursday's meeting?
Formally, they'll need to sort of adopt the tentative budget, which is a statutory requirement that if Council were to cross a moment of impasse, let's say, and have a fundamental disagreement about a future operating budget, we would sort of revert to the existing budget that was adopted on the 1st. And every city and town in Utah is required to do this just to ensure that if there is impasse, God forbid, that at least the essential services, law enforcement, public works, transit, building, planning, engineering, can continue to be provided while the council deliberations continued. So that's sort of the technical aspect. But for the better part of 2.5, almost 3 months, we've been reviewing deliberatively operating requests, capital requests. I think I've said it before in my 10 years or so with the municipality, this is arguably the most unexciting or uninteresting budget from 1 year to the next, in that really we've tried to find efficiencies to maintain essential services, not seeking very many new positions or new initiatives, really sort of hold down the fort while we can. There's some economic instability looking ahead, and we're really trying to respond to that. However, there are some needs we're taking care of, making some smart investments in parks and public works and technology and transportation and other areas.
So the good news is that the current fiscal year revenues are tracking slightly higher than last year. So what does that mean for this coming fiscal year?
It means that first of all, going into this next year, it means no new property tax increase. We are not recommending a property tax increase with this budget, which is also consistent with my last 10 years. And it means that sales tax, we are projecting a relatively minor increase, I think, when it's all said and told, almost $600,000-$700,000, which is a relatively small amount year over year for almost $100 million operating budget. So projections are stable to a little increase or a little incremental increase, and that's uncommon for us. We've had a tremendous success with the resort economy over the last decade. We've had several years where we've had multi-million dollar projected sales tax tax increases. So this year, it's relatively flat, really trying to live within our means.
You said $100 million operating budget? That's up.
Well, almost when it's all said and done.
You're including capital in there.
I'm including the enterprise fund.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Really, it's the full Monty, water, transportation, public works, parking, streets, parks, recreation, the MARC, the library, the ice rink. All of the wonderful services that we provide. And as you know, we're by and large a service-oriented organization. We have individuals throughout the city 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week that are plowing your streets, mowing your fields, cleaning your parks, separating trash, putting out columns for pedestrians, removing graffiti. You know, on and on we go. Your lifeguards, your ice skating instructors, you name it.
So any new full-time employees recommended?
There are a few. We have a request for a new detective and sergeant in our police department for our law enforcement services. Just given the growth of things, we have many more cases that we have to investigate. We're seeking a new resource there. We have an internal technology resource to help the organization with its IT infrastructure in terms of, you know, we have all these facilities throughout the city and adding to our help desk services. So when we have problems during public meetings or we're meeting with stakeholders and clients with our technology, that we're able to respond better. And then there's some conversion from seasonal positions to full-time in two areas in particular, in the public works enterprise and also in the transportation enterprise, where given the demand for level of service just year-round, day and night, converting some seasonal positions to full-time positions.
Yeah. Now, so has staff found all of the savings that it's going to? I mean, and what department came up with the biggest savings?
I'm not sure off the top of my head which department came up with the biggest savings, but we really sort of plowed into each division to find any efficiencies, unspent balances, or otherwise. You know, most municipalities have sort of a sort of perverse incentive to, if you don't spend it, we're taking it away. And that creates this really weird incentive in the public sector, in other agencies, to sort of spend what you have at the last minute. Now, Park City does not have that philosophy. We try to be efficient and effective and make smart investments with our expenditures. However, there are often cyclical projects. Let's say we run like a survey every 2 years, or we know we're going to participate in a UDOT analysis every 2 years. Sometimes we will carry that budget through the two-year period, and this year efficiency we can, and then plowing those back into the inflationary request, probably much like KPCW. The cost of paper, the cost of pencils, tuition, supplies, gasoline, salt, and sand, tires for our equipment, everything has really gone up across the board.
Recreation shows about a $400,000 increase in the first half of fiscal year 25. So where's that extra money going?
By and large, I think it's going to meet the demand for services generally, so that includes the instructors, that includes tennis and pickleball, you name it. But it's also a significant factor is the operating enterprise that will operate the new aquatics facilities. So there are transformations of positions to handle the aquatics facility, its equipment, its maintenance, and the lifeguarding services.
Well, what about the expansion of the MARC? Because this was did not get approved as part of the bond that didn't pass a few years ago. Are we saving up money to maybe do that with cash instead?
Let's see. We are. So we are taking care of the aquatics facility with existing balances that have been built over years in our capital fund. So two different things happening here. We have a capital investment to cure the construction enterprise, and then we have a separately operational request to operate it, to maintain it, ensure it's clean, to make sure it's open at the hours, and make sure it's safe with lifeguards that are going to be, in some cases, year-round now as opposed to seasonal.
All right. The council will be discussing the Mwinney Lot feasibility report and whether this will work for a new senior center. So what does the report say?
I think by and large it says with enough gumption and commitment, this lot can be converted for another highest and potentially best use. In this case, it's a senior center and host a facility. But like most things in Park City, it's complicated. And it's complicated because it's situated in an area that has a relatively high groundwater table. It's situated in an area that used to host, I believe, an auto body or an auto mechanics garage, so there's some soil.
It was the Mwinney's car lot.
There goes Mwinney car lot, and then I'm told it was a car dealership at times too. It's also within the city's soils ordinance, and it's in a part of our community that just probably receives some overarching soils from the mining area as an effluent, either using the streams to push soils downhill. And then it's in the middle of sort of, I'll call it a campus, between the library, the senior center, a skate park, city park, the gazebo, the bandstand. It's in this area that has a bunch of different uses. Now, some of those uses are actually very compatible, given the time that those facilities are used or when their parking lots are full or not full. So with enough conviction, with enough gumption, we believe it's a suitable location, but it's going to have to be tailored sort of surgically to meet some of those challenges and needs and the complexity of the area overall.
Yeah, one of the nicest parts of that area is that gorgeous, I think it's a longleaf cottonwood tree that, you know, I mean, kids just spend hours climbing. So if something gets built, does that go away?
I don't know. I think that's probably getting too far ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
We'll have to make that decision. But I just want to say, like, that is the perfect illustration. There are very few easy decisions left in this community. And no matter what we do to move some of these projects forward that people are asking for, the community is seeking, there's going to have to be some trade-offs.
Yeah, so where does the mucking and drilling competition go on Miner's Day?
It's a great question, too. I mean, things like that, we're just going to have to either find alternative locations or make a different type of accommodation. More and more, this is what we're seeing. As Park City has just built out over the last 100 years or so, there are going to be these nostalgic elements that we need to perhaps reimagine, re-envision, or relocate. Now, no one just wants to do those unilaterally. It's because the community saying, maybe there's a higher and better use of this area. Maybe we can relocate this nostalgic element or otherwise. And that is one of the challenges for the mayor and council that I'm just seeing more and more as I serve the municipality, that there are just very few decisions left that unilaterally there's no one that cares about a cotton tree or wants to bring up a mining event that we hold in a location that may conflict with this future need or this future facility.
And overflow parking for the library special events, the film series, the book sale, things like that.
Yeah,
pretty well used.
I think we can go on and on. This is you are illustrating the point. However, again, this is a campus area. It does have a large supply of overall parking, and many of these activities are not happening at the same time. For instance, the film series, which you and I attend and participate in, typically those are later afternoon and evenings, and that is not typically a time that a senior center is activated and active. So perhaps there is some compatibility about utilizing our facilities and our property and just maximizing its utilization as opposed to just building more and more and more.
So what's the June 1st deadline about? Is that self-imposed?
Well, that was from the mayor's state of the city, where she had asked for sort of an update or, you know, sort of a threshold conversation with council members on certain items. And we know that this council really shook the bushes hard on this particular one, saying, go explore the Moini lot, move heaven and earth to do it quickly, conduct a parking analysis, do the geotechnical and the soils analysis. And so we worked really hard, and in about 60, 65 days, we're having a quick turnaround here. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're going to make a final decision. I don't want to oversimplify the importance of the planning and land use process and an adequate parking and transportation study that would be required with any development, city, public or private or otherwise. However, this is sort of the first revisit since we got that demand from council to move fast.
All right, bus rapid transit. What's the latest here? Because we keep hearing you say, oh, you're meeting with High Valley Transit, you're meeting with UDOT. What's happening on 224?
Well, I think we're going to have a verbal discussion, at least in the council meeting on Thursday evening, with Councillor Sirocco, Councillor Rubel, and the mayor. They have been the liaisons on transportation and, in particular, the BRT project on 224. They've had several meetings with High Valley Transit, Summit County, and UDOT officials, and they'll be reporting in on those conversations.
So who's against bringing BRT all the way to Kearns as originally planned? I mean, is it a majority of the city council that doesn't want that?
I haven't heard that anyone is against BRT. I think that's, dare I say, and I don't mean to be combative, I think that's an oversimplification. I think everyone is very supportive of BRT. People are supportive of elevated transit and transportation amenities.
But wanted to stop.
There's a conversation about right-sizing them and how they access town and whether there's widening elements and where the stations go. I haven't heard anyone say stop BRT. I just want to be really clear on the radio because I
haven't
heard
that. They want to stop it. They want to make it different than what was originally approved, and that's bringing BRT BRT all the way to Kearns Boulevard.
So I think to be fair
on the
last quarter of a mile here, I think there's several council members that are wanting to explore alternatives and opportunities. As opposed to widening at the White Barn and where the stations are when they come into town. There was previous conceptions that there'd be dedicated lanes the entire way, and I think council at the end of the road here is just trying to have some deliberations about, are those effective? Are they providing the elevated level of service that they were originally intended? When we had started this project, as you may recall, the terminus was actually in the Bonanza District. And so BRT was actually taking a left-hand turn. They were taking a left-hand turn, and they're no longer doing that. They're going all the way to the Old Town Transit Center. And so, you know, the conversations have changed over 10 years. We have a new mayor and council, and we have several council members that are seeking some additional input and clarity on this last, let's say, half a mile, quarter mile.
Okay, well, we got a pattern going here. I mean, right? It's like, okay, no, we feel differently about BRT. We may not want it to come to Kearns. And then we saw with the ranked choice voting vote here. I mean, council 1 week votes it in. 2 weeks later, it's like it voted out. So what's going on with that specifically, ranked choice vote? I mean, it's like council member Scirocco didn't do his homework, and then, or somebody got to him and had something to say about why this is not a good idea. I mean, as we heard from Mayor Nan, she's never seen anything like this, you know, in her 15 years at Marsac Building. What about you?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Councilmember Scirocco spoke for himself that evening, so he's been quoted all over the media, and I should allow him to speak for himself. I don't want to speak for him, but sure, it was relatively unconventional. It surprised us, and, you know, it appeared that he had a personal change of heart and asked to reconsider the item. At a pure technical level, like at administrative level, which is my job, administerially, there was no concerns with a council member asking to reconsider their motion. But to be fair, you know, this is a sensitive issue because elections have become something that are just sort of tossed into the ether publicly in our society, and there's a lot of people, obviously because of their importance, that feel very strongly about how these are adjudicated, election security, and we wouldn't want to do anything to spread any misinformation about the security of our elections. And so we had contemplated the pilot project over a number of meetings. We had elected to participate in it. We had a council member that had a change of heart. And so you saw the deliberations happen in open. We were asked to convene a special meeting. We did what we were asked, and then sort of the votes fell where they may. Now, again, unconventional. It was a surprise to us. But from an administrative perspective, you know, council has every opportunity to reconsider a previous motion that they took or a vote. But yeah, sure, unconventional.
Okay, and people can decide whether or not they want to run for office. It'll be that first week in June to make that decision. If we have enough candidates, there would be a primary.
Yeah, and then very importantly, I think we worked really hard to try to stabilize things after the reconsideration. And so next week on Tuesday, this is important, from 5:30 to 6:30 in council chambers and online in Zoom, we will be having our first sort of running for office workshop. So that's on Tuesday from 5:30 to 6:30. So it worked really, really fast to get that in motion, given the ask for reconsideration. And it's online, it's accessible. We'll have some former elected officials there. Just teaching people about what it's about, talking about the filing deadlines, campaign finance disclosures, ethics disclosures, and otherwise.
Okay, Matt, anything else you want to add?
That's it, Leslie. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Park City City Manager Matt Dyche. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. A Park City High School tradition is facing some financial challenges as organizers work to raise the money to put on the annual Safe Grad Night. In the studio with details, I have a number of parent organizers. I'll let you guys introduce yourself, because I didn't get y'all's name up front here. So,
hi, I'm Kim Abbott.
And I'm Sylvia Hebert.
I'm Meg Marsland.
Tara Stalker.
Okay, and you're all going to need to get very close to those mics, so let's move you up here. So the event goes back a way. Any of you know when this actually started? And let me know who's talking here.
This is Tara Stalker. The event, as far as we know, goes back before class of 2000. And it's just been an annual tradition for the Park City High School PTSO to carry through.
Okay. So what is Safe Grad Night?
So basically,
It's an alcohol-free night for these kids to get together. This is Sylvia, by the way. For the kids to get together, it's pretty much the last time they see each other. It's like after they graduate, graduation's usually done. It's in an hour. And we don't start till 10 o'clock. And so they have an opportunity to be with their families, go to dinner. And we all know when you hit a certain age, you go to bed by 9 o'clock. So everybody's in bed at that time. And so that's when the kids are like, hey, let's go. And so we provide an environment for them to get together one last time with everybody they graduated with. And believe me, we provide a very, very fun environment.
Well, I was going to ask that. Are the kids involved in the planning process so that you're actually providing what kids want to do?
No. When we took over the planning, the previous parents who had run the annual event had given us some ideas of what the kids liked, and we kind of ran with it. And the last few years, we've been at Basin Rec, so we've had to create our own party environment, and we've just provided something that would be attractive to every graduate that came to the party. Okay. Anywhere from playing basketball, pickleball. We have a hypnotist that comes, which is super, super fun. And then, we have just a variety of other activities for them to do.
Okay, so maybe just start with the details of the event. It happens, of course, on graduation night.
So the graduation night, they do graduation, and then again, they go out with their families. But once they get to us, we do just a small minor detail. We make sure to alcohol test people if we feel like they've been drinking. So that's why we say it's an alcohol-free environment. And once they check in, they're given a wristband with their name on it. And if they decide to leave, which we were totally okay with that, we cut the band off, and then they leave, and they can't come back in. So if you want to come at 11, 12 o'clock at night, we're fine with that as well. It's usually over at 2 a.m. And I know to us that sounds very late, but it goes by so fast. You don't even realize it's 2 a.m. And I have to be honest. I'm going to give a little plug here. I have the best job at grad night. I get to do Sylvia's stash. And I get to walk around with, like, I'm not going to say how much because then kids will rob me. But I have a little bit of money, and I get to ask trivia questions to these kids. And they follow me around all night. They're like, Miss Hebert, will you ask us another question? And then for the kids that, you know, aren't super into trivia, I have athletic things. We have a handstand contest. I'll have some of them sing the national anthem. You know, and I just get to give away cash for them to carry over going into college. It's really a fun night. They learn to play poker. We have a casino area. I don't know if that's good or bad. But we're teaching these kids life skills along the way while having fun. Sure. So those are some of the small details.
So we've got about 400 graduates. How many do you usually get?
About 80% of the class joins us, and they may not all be there at the same time because for whatever reason they've got other things to do, but we usually get about 80% of the class that comes through and has fun with us, and then they go home and go on to the rest of their graduation parties.
All right, so is there a fee for kids to participate?
It's free at the door. That's why we fundraise, so that we can provide a party for these kids, and they don't have to pay anything when they get to us.
All right, so who is funding this? I mean, do we have contributions from Park City School District, from Park City Education Foundation?
Thanks for asking that question. We want to send a big thank you to the Park City Ed Foundation for sponsoring us this year, as well as Summit County Behavioral Health and Woodward. Woodward is sponsoring the event. And then we also want to thank our parents and community partners, because without them, this party wouldn't happen. And we were in danger of canceling it last week because we just didn't have enough donations. And some of the moms reached out to all the parents. And we usually ask for a suggested donation of $50 per student to cover all the activities that we provide for them. And the word got out last week that we were potentially going to have to cancel it, and the community has really stepped up, and we're able to move forward with it. We're still in need of raffle items, but we're in a good place today.
All right. So, I mean, what's your budget? I mean, how much does something like this cost to put on?
Well, it's been about $16,000, mm-hmm. but that does cover 400 students, so that's kind of where we are with that.
Okay.
We try to be very fiscally responsible with the money that's donated to us and reach out. And we try to provide something for every graduate.
All right. You mentioned, so it sounds like you're good on the funding, or are you still taking donations?
We are still taking donations. And
specifically now we're really asking for the raffle items. That really helps us send our grads off with a fun gift or a cash prize from Sylvia Stash.
So give me an idea. What are you looking for in terms of raffle items? Something kids would like.
Oh, you know, we do anything from camping items to bedding for dorms or an apartment that the kids are going to move into. We do
gift cards.
Gift cards. Mm-hmm. It could be anything. Amazon, Walmart, Target, even Chick-fil-A.
Right.
You know, the kids still go to, or a really big one is Uber Eats or DoorDash, because once they go to their adult life, you know, sometimes they just want somebody to take care of them.
All right. How do kids get to grad night? I mean, are there any shuttles from the high school, or do people just get there on their own?
The kids come on their own. They drive to the location, and once they're there, they come in, and they drive home when they're done.
And I want to be clear, too. When they show up, if we do feel like they've been drinking, we alcohol test them and they test positive or whatever, we're not there to get them in trouble. We just call their parents and say, hey, can you come pick up your child or your soon-to-be adult? You know, we're not there to get them in trouble. We want them to have fun. That's not what this is about.
Okay. And then how is it tested? Just one of the breathalyzers?
Yes, ma'am. We put the breathalyzer. Yeah.
Yeah. And then how do people reach you and if, in fact, they do have some raffle items or have a cash donation?
Sure. We have Facebook and Instagram pages, Park City High School Parents. We have the link on there. And also, if they want to go to the high school webpage, we're under the community tab, Park City High School PTSO.
All right. And then the rest of you all act as volunteers, so you're there until 2 a.m., maybe probably 4 a.m. cleaning up.
Actually, the kids are really, really helpful. We have a really good group of parents that come, and we just make sure that things are picked up, and we're usually out of there by 2:15. It's pretty seamless. We've got a well-oiled machine now.
Yeah, sounds like a good night.
It's a great night. It's a blast.
And a lot of them don't know how much fun it is. They're like, I'm not going to go. And then the last minute, everybody's going. You know, this day and age, everybody's looking for that instant gratification and what everybody's doing. So they wait till the last minute to commit. That's why it's been so hard to raise the money, because people can't commit just yet. They don't know if their kids are coming. But they end up, you know, lately we've had a lot of parents really step in and, you know, donate the money, whether they know if their kids are going or not. But, I mean, for the most part, once they make that commitment to go, they have so much fun.
Okay. Anything else, ladies, you want to mention that we may not have gotten to?
I just want to mention that we have student council support as well. So that's a big part of the high school PTO, and those kids all support it. And so that means other kids are going to want to come, and it's a great turnout and a great event.
Okay. All right. Appreciate all your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Women's Inspired Network, or WIN as it's known, which is focused on connecting and supporting women, is filling a transitional residential unit at Peace House with new household items and giving more than $8,000 in scholarships to Wasatchback High School graduates this month. Their next monthly meetup will be a special Wednesday event instead of a Tuesday. Members are invited to sign up online and to bring an item, which WIN Executive Director Kristen Gunnerud will help fill one of the Peace House transitional units.
We are going to furnish all the pots and pans, the towels, the bedding, everything, because one of the magical, beautiful things about these transitional units is when they move in, everything is new. And when they go to move to the next stop, they get to take everything with them.
A sign up on the website lists all of the needed items. The items need to be dropped off at the Peace House the evening of the event, Wednesday, May 7th, between 5:45 and 8 p.m. Or if you can't make it, just drop it off at the Peace House during business hours. Also coming up is an opportunity for Parkites to learn how to design their own website. It's a 2.5-day event put on by Jumbo John Websites. Gunnerud says at least at less than $1,000, the course has been deeply discounted.
What I love about Jumbo John is they're all about the storytelling and really bringing that to life in a really beautiful way. And so these websites are beautiful, they're powerful, they will help you get your message across in a really amazing way on top of having all the back end.
There are 20 spots available. A registration link can be found online at kpcw.org. WIN has also been a longtime supporter of high school graduates. This year, she says, they'll be handing out $85,000 in scholarships for 10 female high school seniors across the Wasatch Back. Membership and more information on the Women's Inspired Network can be found on our website, kpcw.org. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City at 91.7 and 88.1 FM in Summit County, 91.9 FM in Wasatch County. Stream us live at kpcw.org.